Random House Audio presents The Elegant Universe, Superstrings, Hidden Dimensions, and the Quest for the Ultimate Theory by Brian Greene. Read for you by Eric Davies, with prefaces read by the author.
This is the author, Brian Greene. Preface. During the last 30 years of his life, Albert Einstein sought relentlessly for a so-called unified field theory, a theory capable of describing nature's forces within a single, all-encompassing, coherent framework. Einstein was not motivated by the things we often associate with scientific undertakings, such as trying to explain this or that piece of experimental data. Instead, he was driven by a passionate belief that the deepest understanding of the universe would reveal its truest wonder, the simplicity and power of the principles on which it is based. Einstein wanted to illuminate the workings of the universe with a clarity never before achieved, allowing us all to stand in awe of its sheer beauty and elegance. Einstein never realized this dream, in large part because the deck was stacked against him. In his day, a number of essential features of matter and the forces of nature were either unknown or, at best, poorly understood. But during the past half century, physicists of each new generation, through fits and starts and diversions down blind alleys, have been steadily building on the discoveries of their predecessors to piece together an ever fuller understanding of how the universe works. And now, long after Einstein articulated his quest for a unified theory but came up empty-handed, physicists believe they have finally found a framework for stitching these insights together into a seamless whole, a single theory that, in principle, is capable of describing all phenomena. The theory, superstring theory, is the subject of this book. I wrote The Elegant Universe in an attempt to make the remarkable insights emerging from the forefront of physics research accessible to a broad spectrum of readers, especially those with no training in mathematics or physics. Through public lectures on superstring theory I've given over the past few years, I've witnessed a widespread yearning to understand what current research says about the fundamental laws of the universe, how these laws require a monumental restructuring of our conception of the cosmos, and what challenges lie ahead in the ongoing quest for the ultimate theory. I hope that by explaining the major achievements of physics going back to Einstein and Heisenberg, and describing how their discoveries have grandly flowered through the breakthroughs of our age, this book will both enrich and satisfy this curiosity. I also hope that The Elegant Universe will be of interest to readers who do have some scientific background. For science students and teachers, I hope this book will crystallize some of the foundational material of modern physics, such as special relativity, general relativity, and quantum mechanics, while conveying the contagious excitement of researchers closing in on the long-sought unified theory. For the avid reader of popular science, I've tried to explain many of the exhilarating advances in our understanding of the cosmos that have come to light during the last decade. And for my colleagues in other scientific disciplines, I hope this book will give an honest and balanced sense of why string theorists are so enthusiastic about the progress being made in the search for the ultimate theory of nature. Superstring theory casts a wide net. It is a broad and deep subject that draws on many of the central discoveries in physics. Since the theory unifies the laws of the large and of the small, laws that govern physics out to the farthest reaches of the cosmos and down to the smallest speck of matter, there are many avenues by which one can approach the subject. I have chosen to focus on our evolving understanding of space and time. I find this to be an especially gripping developmental path, one that cuts a rich and fascinating swath through the essential new insights. Einstein showed the world that space and time behave in astoundingly unfamiliar ways. Now, cutting-edge research has integrated his discoveries into a quantum universe with numerous hidden dimensions coiled into the fabric of the cosmos, dimensions whose lavishly entwined geometry may well hold the key to some of the most profound questions ever posed. Although some of these concepts are subtle, we will see that they can be grasped through down-to-earth analogies. And when these ideas are understood, they provide a startling and revolutionary perspective on the universe. Throughout this book, I've tried to stay close to the science while giving the reader an intuitive understanding, often through analogy and metaphor, of how scientists have reached the current conception of the cosmos. Although I avoid technical language and equations, because of the radically new concepts involved, the reader may need to pause now and then to mull over a section here or ponder an explanation there in order to follow the progression of ideas fully. A few sections of Part 4, focusing on the most recent developments, are a bit more abstract than the rest. I've taken care to forewarn the reader about these sections and to structure the text so that they can be skimmed or skipped with minimal impact on the book's logical flow. It is perhaps not surprising that my own research is focused on the impact superstring theory has on our conception of space and time, and in a couple of the later chapters, I describe some of the discoveries in which I had the fortune to take part. Although I hope the reader will enjoy reading these inside accounts, I realize that they may leave an exaggerated impression of the role I have played in the development of superstring theory. So let me take this opportunity to acknowledge the more than 1,000 physicists around the world who are crucial and dedicated participants in the effort to fashion the ultimate theory of the universe. Preface to the second edition. While writing The Elegant Universe, I was aware that its readership might be meager. After all, a book about the challenges and triumphs of the modern quest for the deepest laws of nature is not something you imagine breezing through at the beach or curling up with just before going to sleep. And a book that takes on such an abstract subject with the intention of emphasizing the science, not the scientific personalities or the historical anecdotes, might seem to cater to an even smaller audience. But this didn't particularly trouble me, as I told myself frequently, and no doubt with a tinge of melodrama, that if I reached one person, introducing them to a new spectrum of ideas, a new way of thinking about themselves and their place in the cosmos, that would be enough. Be it a young student trying to decide on a direction of study, a working professional seeking something beyond the daily grind, or a retiree who'd finally found the time to read up on developments in science, if I could help guide them toward the new view of the universe emerging from modern physics, the task of writing The Elegant Universe would have been worth the effort. That thought, at the very least, helped me through the demanding times that many an author encounters in the midst of a substantial writing project. I was also encouraged repeatedly by audiences attending various general-level lectures I've been giving on relativity, quantum mechanics, and my own specialty, superstring theory, who seemed enthralled by the strange and startling ideas emerging from cutting-edge research. A universe in which space and time are malleable, a universe with more dimensions than we see, a universe in which the fabric of space can rip, a universe in which everything might be composed of the vibrations of ultra-microscopic loops of energy called strings, was a universe that got people excited and one that many wanted to understand better. The Elegant Universe grew out of those lectures, as my intention was to write a book for those without formal knowledge of mathematics or physics to gain such a familiarity. Although the book agent to whom I first showed my proposal rejected it outright, understandably predicting that the subject was too specialized to attract a mainstream publisher, I could feel enthusiasm for the science when I was out lecturing in the field. It was palpable. The Elegant Universe tapped into this enthusiasm, and the gratifying response it has received is testament to the innate drive so many of us have to explore thoroughly and courageously this place we call home. It has also affirmed my belief that physics provides an author with some of the most wonderful material imaginable. We all love a good story. We all love a tantalizing mystery. We all love the underdog pressing onward against seemingly insurmountable odds. We all, in one form or another, are trying to make sense of the world around us. And all of these elements lie at the core of modern physics. The story is among the grandest, the unfolding of the entire universe. The mystery is among the toughest, figuring out how the cosmos came to be. The odds are among the most daunting, bipeds, newly arrived by cosmic timescales, trying to reveal the secrets of the ages. And the quest is among the deepest. The search for fundamental laws to explain all we see and beyond, from the tiniest particles to the most distant galaxies. It's hard to imagine a richer point of departure. Non-scientists sometimes blur the distinction between the intimidating language, mathematics, in which physics is developed, and the engrossing ideas with which it tussles. But that would be like my trying to assess Huckleberry Finn by reading it in Greek. While I use the Greek alphabet all the time, I don't speak a word of the language, and so my impression of the novel would be, to say the least, compromised. Similarly, when the mathematical barriers are cleared and the concepts of modern physics are expressed in familiar language for all to see and ponder, many who thought they had no interest in science find themselves captivated. When extracted from their technical incarnation, the themes of modern physics are quite literally universal. Of late, this has become increasingly clear with physics' ever more visible cultural presence. There is a growing body of theatrical, musical, and artistic works that have drawn their inspiration from modern science. I'm aware of nearly a dozen recent plays, a full-length string quartet, a variety of films and numerous screenplays, an opera, a series of paintings and sculptures that to varying degrees express, interpret, and extend the human drama of the scientific journey. Although wonderful, I don't find this particularly surprising. I've always been most taken with art and literature that gives a vigorous shake to my sense of what's real and important, an outlook that many people I've encountered also share. And this is just what the most far-reaching discoveries in physics during the last 100 years have done. It's no exaggeration to say that relativity and quantum mechanics rewrote the previously conceived rules of reality, and that while more speculative, superstring theory is now generating major revisions once again. It is little wonder that artists, writers, composers, and filmmakers are finding resonance between their work and these scientific challenges to the status quo. And it's not a one-way street. Integrating the discoveries of physics into our collective worldview is a slow process. Even today, more than a century later, most people have yet to appreciate fully the experimentally confirmed lessons coming from Einstein or those of the quantum. By fearlessly taking on the science and leveraging its intrinsic fascination to produce entertaining works of substance and drama, the arts may well be the perfect medium to fully integrate science into the world's conversation. We may even find that the art world's scientifically inspired works will provide new stimulus to the scientific imagination and in some possibly intangible way prepare us for the next step in understanding the universe. Certainly, shifting the sharp spotlight illuminating science from the purely rigorous numerical and cognitive to one with the softer, more ambiguous glow of human sensibilities is enormously potent. When science is widely seen as an integral part of what makes us human, our own connection to the cosmos will be significantly strengthened. Truly, science is the thread that weaves us all into the fabric of reality. As far as developments in superstring theory go, the years since the initial publication of The Elegant Universe have been extremely productive. But there's yet to be the revolution in thinking that many suspect is still lurking just around the corner. This has ramifications that are both good and bad. On the positive side, nothing in the text has become outdated or irrelevant. Were I writing a book on string theory today, I'd cover everything I do, perhaps with a change in emphasis here or there, but the result would be, for the most part, largely indistinguishable from The Elegant Universe. One significant change would be to add a chapter on interesting new ideas suggesting that strings and the extra spatial dimensions they require may be somewhat larger than conventionally thought, a possibility that was just being developed during the writing of The Elegant Universe. I'd also add a discussion of ingenious new work seeking a more exact, a so-called non-perturbative, formulation of string theory. So, as you read chapters 6, 8, and 12, keep in mind that strings and extra dimensions might not be quite as small as I describe, and that significant progress has been made in finding string theory's exact equations. Although, as yet, physicists have not succeeded in applying these equations to resolve key questions raised in those chapters. The negative side of the text not requiring a major update is that many of the obstacles described have yet to be surmounted. Frankly, while we all want progress to be fast and furious, this is par for the course. Superstring theory is tackling the most fundamental problems in theoretical physics, many of which are well beyond the reach of experimental guidance. The payoff of success would be huge, as some of the deepest questions about the cosmos could well be answered. But progress requires hard work, patience, luck, and a significant amount of inspiration, just the ingredients whose timescales for success are beyond our control or prediction. Maybe we will reach the sought-after level of insight during our generation, and maybe we won't. Maybe it will be many generations down the road. The only thing we can say for sure is that we won't know if we don't try. Judging by the ever more talented graduate students entering the field, we will have many enthusiastic researchers ready to grab the torch and head further down the path. We will be trying, zealously trying, to unravel the mysteries of the cosmos for years to come.
Part 1. The Edge of Knowledge. Chapter 1. Tied Up with String. Calling it a cover-up would be far too dramatic, but for more than half a century, even in the midst of some of the greatest scientific achievements in history, physicists have been quietly aware of a dark cloud looming on a distant horizon. The problem is this. There are two foundational pillars upon which modern physics rests. One is Albert Einstein's general relativity, which provides a theoretical framework for understanding the universe on the largest of scales, stars, galaxies, clusters of galaxies, and beyond to the immense expanse of the universe itself. The other is quantum mechanics, which provides a theoretical framework for understanding the universe on the smallest of scales, molecules, atoms, and all the way down to subatomic particles like electrons and quarks. Through years of research, physicists have experimentally confirmed to almost unimaginable accuracy virtually all predictions made by each of these theories. But these same theoretical tools inexorably lead to another disturbing conclusion. As they are currently formulated, general relativity and quantum mechanics cannot both be right. The two theories underlying the tremendous progress of physics during the last 100 years, progress that has explained the expansion of the heavens and the fundamental structure of matter, are mutually incompatible. If you have not heard previously about this ferocious antagonism, you may be wondering why. The answer is not hard to come by. In all but the most extreme situations, physicists study things that are either small and light, like atoms and their constituents, or things that are huge and heavy, like stars and galaxies, but not both. This means that they need use only quantum mechanics or only general relativity and can, with a furtive glance, shrug off the barking admonition of the other. For 50 years, this approach has not been quite as blissful as ignorance, but it has been pretty close. But the universe can be extreme. In the central depths of a black hole, an enormous mass is crushed to a minuscule size. At the moment of the Big Bang, the whole of the universe erupted from a microscopic nugget whose size makes a grain of sand look colossal. These are realms that are tiny and yet incredibly massive, therefore requiring that both quantum mechanics and general relativity simultaneously be brought to bear. For reasons that will become increasingly clear as we proceed, the equations of general relativity and quantum mechanics, when combined, begin to shake, rattle, and gush with steam like a red-lined automobile. Put less figuratively, well-posed physical questions elicit nonsensical answers from the unhappy amalgam of these two theories. Even if you are willing to keep the deep interior of a black hole and the beginning of the universe shrouded in mystery, you can't help feeling that the hostility between quantum mechanics and general relativity cries out for a deeper level of understanding. Can it really be that the universe at its most fundamental level is divided, requiring one set of laws when things are large and a different, incompatible set when things are small? Superstring theory, a young upstart compared with the venerable edifices of quantum mechanics and general relativity, answers with a resounding no. Intense research over the past decade by physicists and mathematicians around the world has revealed that this new approach to describing matter at its most fundamental level resolves the tension between general relativity and quantum mechanics. In fact, superstring theory shows more. Within this new framework, general relativity and quantum mechanics require one another for the theory to make sense. According to superstring theory, the marriage of the laws of the large and the small is not only happy, but inevitable. That's part of the good news. But superstring theory, string theory for short, takes this union one giant step further. For three decades, Einstein sought a unified theory of physics, one that would interweave all of nature's forces and material constituents within a single theoretical tapestry. He failed. Now, proponents of string theory claim that the threads of this elusive unified tapestry finally have been revealed. String theory has the potential to show that all of the wondrous happenings in the universe, from the frantic dance of subatomic quarks to the stately waltz of orbiting binary stars, from the primordial fireball of the Big Bang to the majestic swirl of heavenly galaxies, are reflections of one grand physical principle, one master equation. Because these features of string theory require that we drastically change our understanding of space, time, and matter, they will take some time to get used to sink in at a comfortable level. But as shall become clear, when seen in its proper context, string theory emerges as a dramatic yet natural outgrowth of the revolutionary discoveries of physics during the past 100 years. In fact, we shall see that the conflict between general relativity and quantum mechanics is actually not the first, but the third in a sequence of pivotal conflicts encountered during the past century, each of whose resolution has resulted in a stunning revision of our understanding of the universe. The three conflicts. The first conflict, recognized as far back as the late 1800s, concerns puzzling properties of the motion of light. Briefly put, according to Isaac Newton's laws of motion, if you run fast enough, you can catch up with a departing beam of light, whereas according to James Clerk Maxwell's laws of electromagnetism, you can't. As we will discuss in Chapter 2, Einstein resolved this conflict through his theory of special relativity, and in so doing completely overturned our understanding of space and time. According to special relativity, no longer can space and time be thought of as universal concepts set in stone, experienced identically by everyone. Rather, space and time emerged from Einstein's reworking as malleable constructs whose form and appearance depend on one's state of motion. The development of special relativity immediately set the stage for the second conflict. One conclusion of Einstein's work is that no object, in fact no influence or disturbance of any sort, can travel faster than the speed of light. But, as we shall discuss in Chapter 3, Newton's experimentally successful and intuitively pleasing universal theory of gravitation involves influences that are transmitted over vast distances of space instantaneously. It was Einstein, again, who stepped in and resolved the conflict by offering a new conception of gravity with his 1915 general theory of relativity. Just as special relativity overturned previous conceptions of space and time, so too did general relativity. Not only are space and time influenced by one's state of motion, but they can warp and curve in response to the presence of matter or energy. Such distortions to the fabric of space and time, as we shall see, transmit the force of gravity from one place to another. Space and time, therefore, can no longer be thought of as an inert backdrop on which the events of the universe play themselves out. Rather, through special and then general relativity, they are intimate players in the events themselves. Once again, the pattern repeated itself. The discovery of general relativity, while resolving one conflict, led to another. Over the course of three decades, beginning in 1900, physicists developed quantum mechanics, discussed in Chapter 4, in response to a number of glaring problems that arose when 19th century conceptions of physics were applied to the microscopic world. And as mentioned above, the third and deepest conflict arises from the incompatibility between quantum mechanics and general relativity. As we shall see in Chapter 5, the gently curving geometrical form of space emerging from general relativity is at loggerheads with the frantic, roiling, microscopic behavior of the universe implied by quantum mechanics. As it was not until the mid-1980s that string theory offered a resolution, this conflict is rightly called the central problem of modern physics. Moreover, building on special and general relativity, string theory requires its own severe revamping of our conceptions of space and time. For example, most of us take for granted that our universe has three spatial dimensions. But this is not so according to string theory, which claims that our universe has many more dimensions than meet the eye, dimensions that are tightly curled into the folded fabric of the cosmos. So central are these remarkable insights into the nature of space and time that we shall use them as a guiding theme in all that follows. String theory, in a real sense, is the story of space and time since Einstein. To appreciate what string theory actually is, we need to take a step back and briefly describe what we have learned during the last century about the microscopic structure of the universe. The universe at its smallest. What we know about matter. The ancient Greeks surmised that the stuff of the universe was made up of tiny, uncuttable ingredients that they called atoms. Just as the enormous number of words in an alphabetic language is built up from the wealth of combinations of a small number of letters, they guessed that the vast range of material objects might also result from combinations of a small number of distinct elementary building blocks. It was a prescient guess. More than 2,000 years later, we still believe it to be true, although the identity of the most fundamental units has gone through numerous revisions. In the 19th century, scientists showed that many familiar substances, such as oxygen and carbon, had a smallest recognizable constituent. Following in the tradition laid down by the Greeks, they called them atoms. The name stuck, but history has shown it to be a misnomer, since atoms surely are cuttable. By the early 1930s, the collective works of J.J. Thomson, Ernest Rutherford, Niels Bohr, and James Chadwick had established the solar system-like atomic model with which most of us are familiar. Far from being the most elementary material constituent, atoms consist of a nucleus containing protons and neutrons that is surrounded by a swarm of orbiting electrons. For a while, many physicists thought that protons, neutrons, and electrons were the Greeks' atoms. But in 1968, experimenters at the Stanford Linear Accelerator Center, making use of the increased capacity of technology to probe the microscopic depths of matter, found that protons and neutrons are not fundamental either. Instead, they showed that each consists of three smaller particles called quarks, a whimsical name taken from a passage in James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake by the theoretical physicist Murray Gell-Mann, who previously had surmised their existence. The experimenters confirmed that quarks themselves come in two varieties, which were named, a bit less creatively, up and down. A proton consists of two up quarks and a down quark. A neutron consists of two down quarks and an up quark. Everything you see in the terrestrial world and the heavens above appears to be made from combinations of electrons, up quarks, and down quarks. No experimental evidence indicates that any of these three particles is built up from something smaller. But a great deal of evidence indicates that the universe itself has additional particulate ingredients. In the mid-1950s, Frederick Rhines and Clyde Cowan found conclusive experimental evidence for a fourth kind of fundamental particle called a neutrino, a particle whose existence was predicted in the early 1930s by Wolfgang Pauli. Neutrinos proved very difficult to find because they are ghostly particles that only rarely interact with other matter. An average energy neutrino can easily pass right through many trillion miles of lead without the slightest effect on its motion. This should give you significant relief, because right now as you read this, billions of neutrinos ejected into space by the sun are passing through your body and the Earth as well, as part of their lonely journey through the cosmos. In the late 1930s, another particle called a muon, identical to an electron except that a muon is about 200 times heavier, was discovered by physicists studying cosmic rays, showers of particles that bombard Earth from outer space. Because there was nothing in the cosmic order, no unsolved puzzle, no tailor-made niche that necessitated the muon's existence, the Nobel Prize-winning particle physicist Isidore Isaac Rabi greeted the discovery of the muon with a less than enthusiastic, "Who ordered that?" Nevertheless, there it was, and more was to follow. Using ever more powerful technology, physicists have continued to slam bits of matter together with ever-increasing energy, momentarily recreating conditions unseen since the Big Bang. In the debris, they have searched for new fundamental ingredients to add to the growing list of particles. Here is what they have found. Four more quarks, charm, strange, bottom, and top, and another even heavier cousin of the electron called a tau, as well as two other particles with properties similar to the neutrino, called the muon neutrino and tau neutrino, to distinguish them from the original neutrino, now called the electron neutrino. These particles are produced through high-energy collisions and exist only ephemerally. They are not constituents of anything we typically encounter. But even this is not quite the end of the story. Each of these particles has an antiparticle partner, a particle of identical mass, but opposite in certain other respects, such as its electric charge, as well as its charges with respect to other forces discussed below. For instance, the antiparticle of an electron is called a positron. It has exactly the same mass as an electron, but its electric charge is +1, whereas the electric charge of the electron is -1. When in contact, matter and antimatter can annihilate one another to produce pure energy. That's why there is extremely little naturally occurring antimatter in the world around us. Physicists have recognized a pattern among these particles. The matter particles neatly fall into three groups, which are often called families. Each family contains two of the quarks, an electron, or one of its cousins, and one of the neutrino species. The corresponding particle types across the three families have identical properties except for their mass, which grows larger in each successive family. The upshot is that physicists have now probed the structure of matter to scales of about a billionth of a billionth of a meter and shown that everything encountered to date, whether it occurs naturally or is produced artificially with giant atom smashers, consists of some combination of particles from these three families and their antimatter partners. The three families of fundamental particles and their masses, in multiples of the proton mass. Family 1. Particle, electron. Mass, 0.00054. Electron neutrino. Less than 10 to the minus 8 power. Up quark, 0.0047. Down quark, 0.0074. Family 2. Particle, muon. Mass, 0.11. Muon neutrino, less than 0.0003. Charm quark, 1.6.